Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words, fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words, fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words,
have you ever experienced trouble and then basically automatically you are thinking about someone that is going to help you out, and you wish that that person or that group of people, they are going to be around you in order to be able to support whatever you are experiencing at that moment? Well, in logistics and supply chain, we experience that very often. And it's always good to have someone that is going to be on our side, giving us direction, insight. And today is a very special day for me. I have Dr. Jim Tompkins, and we are going to be talking about his new book, Insightful Leadership. And as always, it's going to be amazing because Dr. Tompkins is always a great, great guidance for everything that we do on a regular basis. This is Coffee Break Logistics and Supply Chain. This is a show that is called No Booking. And why is no booking? Is because you don't need to do anything and you are going to have the best experience from people that knows a lot about the industry, logistics and supply chain. So it's a pleasure for me to welcome you, sir.
Thank you, Jose. It's a pleasure to be back with you and always good to see you.
It's amazing. No one remember, but almost a year ago, you were here and we were talking about Buca, right?
Yes.
It's almost a year. It's amazing. I mean, how time flies.
Yes, that's amazingly quick. My wife told me last week that I need to have a COVID test. And I said, why? And she said, well, we leave for a cruise next Tuesday. I said, no, that's not until September. She said it is September. So yes, time goes very, very quickly. And in some ways, it feels like I was on the show just a month ago. So, but if you look at how much has happened in that 1 year period, it almost seems like 10 years as far as the amount of activity and learning and insight that's occurred with respect to the supply chain and logistics over the last year. So crazy times, absolutely.
Yeah, if you see, a year ago I used to have hair, today it's almost gone.
I think I have about the same amount of hair as I did a year ago, and you too.
Jim, so I heard that you're going to go on vacation on a cruise. Where are you going?
We're going to Alaska. We've been two Alaskan cruises in the past, and we love them both. And the last four cruises we had planned have all canceled. And so we said, well, let's do one that we're pretty certain is going to occur. And so we are leaving Tuesday morning and we'll be gone for 2 weeks. And although we've done Alaska before, it's a marvelous cruise. And I'm looking forward to just kind of decompressing. And to be perfectly honest, I have a long list. Here's the things I have to do on that cruise. So it's not like I'm going to be totally on vacation. I have a list of work I want to do, and I enjoy that. You know, my wife sleeps more than I do, and so I get up early and work for 3 or 4 hours, and then we have a great time doing the cruise events and And then I think about things all day long, and then I write them down at night, and the next morning I turn them into blogs or podcasts or something, and also cross things off my to-do list. So all good.
Yeah, definitely. It seems to be that we have the same schedule. I do that very often. I mean, I wake up early and working things, and then spend time with the family. But work is around us all the time.
Yes.
So you're going to go to Vancouver or?
Yeah, we fly from Raleigh to Seattle and Seattle into Vancouver. We get on the ship in Vancouver, and then 2 weeks later, we get off in San Francisco. And the reason we have to do the COVID test is not for the cruise, but it's because we're going into Canada.
Very good, very good.
Yeah.
Wow, it's going to be a nice trip. So I'm hoping that you are going to have fun. Please don't work too much. I mean, just focus on vacation.
I will do both and enjoy both.
So, I mean, it's a great news that you have your new book. Tell me something more about not only the book, but for the people that probably haven't heard about you, let us know about you, a short summary of your experience.
Well, it actually began 50 years ago at Purdue University in a bachelor's, master's, and PhD in industrial engineering, and went from there in the Army for 3 years, and then came out of the Army and was a professor for 4 years. And then I started a company called Tompkins International, and I worked there for a total of 45 years. And in those 45 years, we built a very successful company. And although I don't work at Tompkins International anymore, I left there when COVID hit. I still own 22% of the company, so I'm excited about that company doing well. But I saw an opportunity to do something new. And when we spoke a year ago, I know we talked a little about Jeff Bezos and Amazon and the network effect. So what I've done is I've taken the network effect over the last 2 years and applied it by developing a network of global expertise. And we have 78 business partners around the world now, literally around the world, China, Indonesia, Singapore, Hong Kong, Australia, India, Africa, Europe, Latin America, and North America. And we have partners in these locations. And what they do is they find opportunities to help companies. And then we find companies to solve those problems. And so we are is a matchmaker. And so we have problems, we have solutions, we put them together. And now where our network has hit critical mass, the number of new opportunities we're solving new and important problems every day. And the five areas we work in is we help people raise capital. We help people with the facilities. We help people with the logistics. We help them with technology, and we help them with leadership. And so the new book on insightful leadership is my fourth book in leadership I've written over the years. I've written a total of 31 books. All the rest were logistics and supply chain, but four books in leadership. And as you and I have talked personally, there's two of me. There's Dr. Tompkins, who writes supply chain books, and then there's Jim Tompkins, who writes leadership books, because those leadership books are based on my experiences. And this new book is about my experience of living through COVID and what I learned. And so that's what insightful leadership's about.
Yeah. And what is the biggest inspiration, or what was the biggest inspiration for that book?
It was me not understanding how much of what I knew was obsolete. You know, if we look at what we knew and we thought was true in 2019, by April of 2020, it was clear that a lot was no longer valid. The level of VUCA you mentioned, which I was studying back in 2018, 2019, but with COVID, COVID was the mother of all volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. And what it did is it took the supply chain to its knees. The supply chain didn't work anymore. If we looked at the logistics requirements of e-commerce, it didn't work anymore. If we looked at how we lived, it didn't work anymore. We didn't live and play and go to school and go to church and shop like we used to. And so the game was changed. And I said, wow, how does this change what I do as a professional? And the way I figure that stuff out is I start writing. And I create a lot of paper that never gets anyplace, but I write, and then I figure this out, and I figure that out. And then you finish a chapter, and you do another chapter, and before you know it, you have a book. And so the book came from my being confused as to what do we do differently going forward as opposed to what we've done throughout our careers for the last 30, 40 years.
As we know, there's some companies that are struggling in this particular time, even though that is 3 years already when we start with COVID-19. What exactly we are not doing that we should be doing, especially for those companies that are experiencing some issues?
Well, it gets back to the very core of what leadership thinks its job is. And leadership in 2019 and before, if we were really aware of what was going on, what we did is we came up with a vision, we came up with a strategy, we developed a plan, we developed a budget, we came up with staffing, and then we executed. And then a year later, we would revise the vision and the strategy and the budget, we would revise the staffing, we would revise what we were going to execute, and then we go to work again. We measure our KPIs, and we make sure we're on target, we adjust the organization accordingly, and that's how we did business. The problem with COVID is COVID-19 didn't necessarily change history, but it accelerated history. And so if you're looking at this one-year annual budget, the fact of the matter is that budget was probably only valid for the first month of the year because disruptions occurred, and those disruptions beget tipping points, and those tipping points beget paradigm shifts. And when you have paradigm shifts, the vision and the strategy must change. And so within a one-year period, you have to do that process 10 times over. And so what we found is that doing a vision, a strategy, a budget, a staffing plan, and blah, that didn't work. And what we needed to do is we needed to perpetually have insight based on what was going to be happening. Because we know a month from now, what's going to be happening is different than what is today. So we can't plan based on what happened last month. We have to plan on what happens next month. And so to do that, you need to have insight as to what's going to occur next month. And so it changes the whole dynamic of leadership. And so what the dynamic of leadership now becomes, create a vision, have a strategy, but then have foresight. Look at what's happening now and try to predict where that's leading. And then with that ability, with your experience, that foresight, to look at what's going to happen, then make some decisions about how you're going to turn that foresight into insight that becomes competitive advantage. And so it's a whole new game. And much of what we have learned over our careers is no longer relevant. And so that was the, I thought, I got to write this down. This is important stuff.
Yeah, well, no question about it. I mean, you're absolutely right about that. Now, we are seeing issues with the railroad strike. We are foreseeing issues about, I read in the Washington Journal, I believe, something about Amazon is slowing down in terms of the capacity, the warehouse capacity, and stuff like that. So there are so many things that are happening. Probably they are seeing something that we are not seeing. What is your opinion about, what is happening with the labor? Because the labor, it seems to me, that is a constant in our industry, and it's an issue that, we start dealing with not even before COVID-19, because filling every single position in the logistic and supply chain industry is not easy. It's always a gap. And COVID-19 definitely shows a different picture of that. And since then, it seems to be that the gap is growing and growing. So let's start talking about, for example, the railroad. What is your opinion about that? Why we are facing that situation in these particular times?
Well, very insightful question, Jose, because it really gets at a core of several major issues, and you've got several things that I've written down. But this story that you just gave the highlights of began for me on March 8th, 2020. I was at a MODAC show in Atlanta, and I came home from the show. And of course, I had heard that there was this thing called COVID-19, and I saw several booths at the show that were closed because of COVID-19, but I hadn't paid much attention to it. And I came home on that night, and my wife said, we're going into lockdown. And I thought, oh, wow, that's great. Is that a new restaurant in town? I thought there was a new restaurant called Lockdown. I mean, I had never heard the term, I don't think. And she says, no, we can't leave the house. The schools are closed. The businesses are closed. The stores are closed. And I said, what are you talking about? And that was the beginning of us having a major change in every aspect of our life. And so what we found is people were working from home, and people found they were happy working from home. They weren't spending 2 hours a day commuting. I wasn't spending 20 hours a week in airports. I was able to be much more productive. People were able to be much more productive. We learned how to work remotely. We learned how to use Zoom, and we really became very efficient and effective. A lot of us got to participate in events we didn't get to participate in. Parents got the chance to coach their kids. Grandparents got a chance to go to more soccer games and more hockey games and spend time as a family. And we thought, wow, we like this. And so there was a group of people that said, you know, I don't want to go back. And so now the companies, in fact, there was a big thing on Labor Day. Several companies again said, you must come back to work starting on Labor Day 5 days a week. Well, the good employees did is they quit. They said, no, I am not going back there 5 days a week. I like my life balance. I'm doing a great job. Why do I have to go in the office to entertain my boss? Why can't I work from home and do my job well? And so they didn't return to work. And now the boss said, well, we didn't mean you have to come full time. And here's a hybrid schedule. And people say, I'm not going to follow your hybrid schedule. They said, well, we can be flexible on that. And so it changed how people work. And what it did is it changed who was in charge. Instead of the bosses and management being in charge, now it's the people that work at the company that are in charge. Now, those could be vice presidents, they could be senior vice presidents, or they could be new hires. They are in charge of the company now. And so there's a switch between management and labor, if you will. And so this has spread throughout. What we found with the explosion of e-commerce, we need a lot more workers to work in fulfillment. We need a lot more workers delivering products to the people's homes. And so what we now have is a labor shortage. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to automate functions and so forth. And some of the unions are having difficulty with that. They don't want to have that automation. They don't want to have their jobs changed. And so, you know, we're looking at the big West Coast strike that still is not settled. We have a rail strike going on here. There's the rail strike in the UK that's going to start in 2 weeks. The big one no one's talking about yet is next July, the UPS contract is up. And the Teamsters are beating on their chest saying that we are not going to settle that. There will be a strike unless we get this, 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 and this. They've already agreed on the pay, so the pay is not a topic. It's beyond the pay, all these issues, and it's going to be a challenge. And so labor has a newfound power as a result of the shift in the I want to work how I want to work. There's a lot of people entering the gig industry where they're saying, you know, on Mondays, I want to drive Uber. On Tuesday, I want to work as a bartender. On Wednesday, I'm going to work at this concert. On Thursday, I'm going to go back to Uber, and I'm going to do what I want. On Friday, I don't feel like working on Friday. I'm not going to work on Friday. And so it's become a very, very different working. What we're finding is these things are occurring, and it's becoming a challenge. Now, that challenge is not only there for the labor management thing, but the other topic you mentioned, which is an excellent topic, is this, quote, Amazon slowdown. And that's being reported, and some people that are supposed to be experts are making some statements about it. And I hate to bother the journalist and share some facts, but the facts are Amazon has in the United States about 480 million square feet. Amazon in 2021 had 22% growth. The facilities that they build take about a year from the time you get started until the time to go. And so in 2021, they had to say, okay, what do we project for 2022? And they said, well, if we had 22% growth in 21, we don't see any letting up. Let's assume a 22% growth for 2022. That's what they did. That's the facilities they planned. That's the buildings they started to put up, the buildings they were planning to put up. And now what we find is they only had a 14% growth. But that 14% growth is on top of the 22% they had in prior year. So Amazon is doing great with 14% growth. Their business is very good, but they plan for 22% growth. They're only getting 14% growth. So they do have somewhere around 20, 25,000 square feet of space they don't need. But guess what? The Amazon bought that land, built those buildings, and so now other people are short on space. They're either able to sublease those in favorable terms, or maybe they don't need them for another year, and so it's going to be a longer-term lease. But Amazon's going to make money on that because they built the buildings back when it was cheaper to build the building. So Amazon is doing well. Their growth of sales is good. The facility overhang, the overbuilding of facilities, yes, they overbuilt by about 4%, but that 4% that they overbuilt is going to work out well for them. And then people say, well, yeah, but the profitability is gone. Well, the profitability of the Amazon business is not gone. That has to do with the Rivian stock deal and how they value that stock. And so if you really read the facts, the matter is Amazon is a strong company with good growth, providing great service, and becoming more and more and more dependent. And Amazon is the publisher of inspirational leadership, of insightful leadership. And so, yeah, I find some of these stories kind of funny. But the labor issue is huge. The UPS issue next July will be huge. And we're going to be seeing this around the world. This is not just a U.S. thing. This is around the world. And that's a portion of the shift. And therefore, we must change the way we do business and how we treat our staff and how we help that staff grow and prosper and become feeling like they have more of a meaningful place in life and not just a worker.
And thank you for the clarification about these hard facts, because those are the facts, right? I have to agree to Amazon is a different business model, right? They have something different. I mean, it's not related. I mean, it's related, but it's not the same 3PL concept that we used to handle, right? Space is always on the short offering because it's a gap between the demand and the offer. And not only here in the United States, but around the world, we found the same thing, that we are always playing catch up in regards of the space that is needed for all the VCOs, all the businesses that we handle through the 3PLs. So that is a different model. I mean, when I read it, I didn't agree to this statement because it was probably creating some illusion about that there is crisis coming or anything similar to that, but I took it in a different way. But thank you for the clarification. Now, being practical on the labor side, I mean, what would be your recommendation? Because uncertainty is something that we are gonna have all the time, right? It's part of the VUCA world that you know very well. So if we are talking about the labor issues, what would be a good recommendation, I mean, in order to face everything related with the labor issues?
Well, I think the basic issue is one of mutual respect and understanding. We've both used the terms labor and management, and that is really, and we do that because that's the terms everyone uses. But the fact of the matter is, what we have is folks that are working together to try to be successful. And you know, it's kind of like, you know, which part of the airplane is most important? Well, you know, the landing gear is important, but so are the engines. Well, so are the pilots, and so are the computers. And you can't pick a part that's most important. Yeah. Very similar in major corporations, in that you have to collaborate. You have to work together as a team. And then in our supply chain world, it's even more challenging that, because our company needs to work with the company that supplies it, that works with the company that supplies it, that works with the company that supplies it. And then we have to work with the people we sell it to and the people they sell it to. And so we have this network effect. And so what we need to have is a greater focus on the well-being of the team. We need to be focusing on the development of the team. We got to look at the career opportunities of the team. We need to look at mentoring and coaching and grasping diversity and focusing on inclusion. We need to work on how do we help these people reach their potential. Okay, now some people don't want to be a C-level person. What they want to do is have a good career, and they have a focus for it of what they want to accomplish. How do we help that person fulfill themselves? How do we help them feel good about their objectives? And so that's a part of leadership. Leadership needs to focus a substantial amount of their attention on what is going on with their people, and how can we help these people feel good about their life and what they're doing and the contributions they are making. And so I think it changes the way leadership thinks about the team and how we create an environment where we can work together in a way that allows us to be successful.
Thank you, Jim, for that insight. Definitely. I mean, it's something that we have to put in practice. Now, everything is changing faster than probably we have experienced before. And that implies that definitely paradigm shift have to be applied every single time. How we can achieve that? I mean, I'm talking about, for the head of the company is one thing, for the middle management is a different thing. Is there any difference between the two?
That's huge, Jose, and thanks for focusing on that. My wife and I have a beach house right on the water, and in Wilmington, North Carolina. And when you sit on our porch, what you notice is the waves never stop. Okay? The waves are perpetual. Okay? Now, sometimes the waves are bigger, sometimes they are smaller, but the waves continue. That's what we are doing in the business world, in the political world, in the whole context of what's going on in Ukraine and so forth, is constant perpetual disruption. And this perpetual disruption, because it is going faster and faster and faster, because of the magnitude of the disruptions are larger and larger and more frequent, we need to respond in a real-time mode. Now, here's a cool thing about it. Perpetual disruption begets perpetual opportunity. Okay, so this is the subtitle of the book is Surfing the Waves to Organizational Excellence. And so I use this surfing analogy to kind of explain what we need to do to seek out and obtain competitive advantage. And so let's say I'm a surfer. The first thing I got to do is I got to get my surfboard and I got to get in the water. If I don't get in the water, if I sit on the beach, I'm not going to enjoy the waves. The disruption of the wave is not going to give me any value. It's not going to give me a good ride. And so I got to get in the water. So I get in the water, and now I'm out in the water, and I'm sitting on my surfboard, and I'm facing the shore because that's the direction I'm going in. But what I'm doing is I'm looking over my shoulder, because what I need to do is I need foresight to understand which wave do I want to ride. because of my experience, because of my knowledge of the waves, because of the terrain that we're in, I'm looking and say, oh, that first wave, no, that's not a good one. That second wave, oh, look at that third wave. The way that third wave is breaking, it's going to be perfect for me to get a good ride. And so that's foresight. That's looking at what are the disruptions, the tipping points, and the paradigm shifts that are coming, and having foresight about, ah, that third wave back is the one to ride. Then what I need to do is I need to have insight into know how to ride that wave. And because I have to be in front of the wave, if I let the wave come over me, I'm going to fall off my board and wind up at the bottom of the ocean eating some sand. And so I need to get in front of that wave. And so I paddle and I accelerate and I enter the wave. And now I need to have insightful leadership in that I need to understand, how do I innovate? How do I position myself on my board? How do I position my board with respect to the wave? Do I cut back? Do I go forward? Do I move over? How am I going to innovate to maximize the value I get out of this wave? And it gives me maximum acceleration. And so I hit the wave perfectly. My insightful leadership allows me to use my innovation to get on that wave. And I am now flying towards the beach and the water is flying and I'm traveling at 60 miles an hour. I'm going, whoa, what a great ride. And now I get to the shore and I get off my board. And what do? I paddle back out. Why? Because there's another disruption coming. That's what we need to do as leaders. We need to have foresight about what's going to happen, insight to be able to turn that into competitive advantage, and then we need to be ready for the next wave. Being ready for the next wave means a core of my profession. I'm a PhD industrial engineer. What do PhD industrial engineers do? They optimize solutions. Well, the fact of the matter is, if I optimize the last wave, I'm not going to be ready for the next wave. And so what I need to do is I need to not optimize. I need to optionize. I need to have options. And so that I know that if this happens, I can do this. If this happens, I can do this. If this happens, I can do this. And so as I'm having insight into what that wave is going to do to me, I need to leave myself options on how to change my path depending upon what that wave does. And so optionality based on you got foresight, insight, innovation, optionality, and now I have the ability to deal with the fast-paced uncertainty that's coming at me, to harness the power of those disruptions and to turn that into competitive advantage that allows me to get ahead of the competition.
Wow, beautiful. I like the part of the having options, multiple different options give you a different engagement with any given situation.
Amen.
Now, we are talking about digital supply chain, right? Before, I mean, we were trying to perfection everything related with just-in-time. What was missing from the just-in-time that it didn't work through the pandemic and in this particular time?
Well, the just-in-time philosophy was a great philosophy when the disruptions were still. You know, if we had pretty good certainty as to what the supply and what the demand and what the lead times were, we could refine the model so that we could have the inventory arrive the day before it needed to be shipped, and we had it just in time. And so we had smaller warehouses, we had less inventory, we had less dollars on the balance sheet, and we were able to really make that work. But then what we saw is this tremendous amount of uncertainty. And the fact of the matter is, we have this just-in-time plan that said, okay, this is the demand we anticipate, and the supply is going to come in on Tuesday, and we'll be able to handle it. Well, on Tuesday, the truck doesn't arrive. And so we call up our company and say, where's the truck? And they said, oh, that container didn't even get on the ship. It's still in Shanghai. And we said, well, how am I going to ship it to my customer if it's still sitting on the dock in Shanghai? He said that, well, you're not. And they're saying, oh, my goodness. So just in time does not work under high uncertainty. And so the problem we had is the guy didn't even know that his container is still in Shanghai. He didn't know that. And so the first thing we got to do is we got to establish some visibility, and we got to know what's going on in the supply chain end to end. We really have to know, not just from our supplier or our suppliers, but we need to go supplier, 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 all the way back to the raw material and understand how is that going to get to me and what are the uncertainties thereof. And so the first thing I want to do is I want to throw the links of a chain out, and I want to create a network where everyone in that network has a real-time single version of the truth as to what is happening. So we all at least are looking at the right problem. If I had known 2 weeks ago that that container was still stuck in Shanghai, I might have been able to do something to fulfill that customer's order. But now I'm finding out I expect it today so I could ship it tomorrow. I'm dead in the water. I'm not going to be able to do anything except call that customer up and say, I'm sorry, that order is not coming when it's supposed to. Then the retailer says to me, but Jim, we have a sale on that next week. We got to have the inventory. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what do I do now? How do I solve this problem? And the answer to that, you don't. And so what companies did is they said, well, we forget just in time. Let's bring in lots of inventory. So they brought in lots of inventory. So now they have the supply, but now the customer changes their demand requirements. And now you have virtually every major apparel retailer in the country that is sitting on winter and spring inventory, even though winter and spring are gone. Summer is gone. They need their fall merchandise, but their stores are still full of stuff that they should have sold in theory last March and April, and it didn't sell. And so what we have is a huge problem in that we're trying to throw the switch just in time. Oh no, let's go just in case. Well, both of them are equally bad. What we need to do is we need to have is a just-in-time system that's based upon the reality of uncertainty and the truth about where the product really is and what are we going to do to fulfill our customers' needs. That's what's really important. Now, some of the time, maybe that needs you need to change your sourcing. You know, maybe what we need to do is put less distance between us and where the stuff is being bought. Now, a lot of people are talking about reshoring. Reshoring certainly makes sense for essential items like semiconductors, like the raw materials for pharmaceuticals and so forth. But we can't afford to reshore into the U.S. products that are manufactured using a lot of labor because we don't have the labor. And so we need to look at alternatives. Can we go to Mexico? Can we go to Brazil? Can we go to Africa? Can we go to the Asian countries and the Asian, ASEAN countries, the 10 countries there, Vietnam and Cambodia and Laos and Indonesia and the Philippines? Can we work with those countries in a way that's going to give us a more reliable source than what we're able to get from China? And so there's huge opportunities to totally rethink. It's not just in time. It's not just in case. It's getting the ability to have resilience to work with uncertainty.
Very well stated. Thank you for that as well. How difficult is to achieve the digital supply network that every single company or any major corporation would like to have?
Well, that great question, because it is a challenge. Lots of companies have promoted lots of people because they've done a good job for their company. Okay, so here's a guy named Charlie who started 38 years ago as a warehouse manager, and now he's the chief supply chain officer. And what he's done for 38 years is basically the same thing. And based on those 38 years, he is now chief supply chain officer. He's got a house at the lake. His four kids are gone through college. He's got a big boat on the lake, and he has been successful. Now, for all of a sudden him to say, you know, I'm going to do things differently, it's very difficult for him to accept that new charter. And so therein lies a challenge, because he is used to taking care of my enterprise. I am focused on ABC Company, and I live and eat and sleep about ABC Company. Well, the fact of the matter is, it's no longer ABC Company versus DEF Company. Now it's the supply chain of ABC versus the supply chain of DEF. I would rather have a good link. I would rather have a good link in a great chain than I would have a great company in a good chain. And so what we need to do is we need to look at, is our network working together at one? As one. And if we have a portion of the network that's not working with us, and we've gone and we've sat down and said, it's critical, we work together, we got to collaborate, we got to share information, and they say, that's not how we do business here. Bye. I don't care how many years you've worked with them. We cannot work with a network, with a company in that network that is not thinking teamwork. And I mean, you know, what's the biggest number on our P&L statement? The biggest number on our P&L statement is cost of goods sold. What's cost of goods sold? It's the accumulation of everyone before us in the network of what they've spent. And so I don't want to just reduce the cost of my transportation. I want to reduce the cost of the entire cost of goods sold by working together in unison with all of the suppliers and all the transportation companies and all the 3PLs that have been handling the product from the time it was originally conceived. And so it's a different job. In fact, ERP, Enterprise Requirements Plan, is a nice software, but what it does, it tends to make people think very selfishly about my enterprise. And we can't think about my enterprise. I need to think about my network. And now I'm going to be able to be successful. A different way of thinking.
Yeah, and you remind me something. It's not about me. It's about us, right?
Yes. Yeah. That's true with respect to how we work with the people and the leadership in the first part of the conversation. And it's true about how we deal with our partners in the overall digital supply network as well.
Now, leadership is a test all the time, and especially when we have a lot of uncertainty. Avoiding difficulties, I would say that is one of the things that you need to keep in mind, right? And you need to be very, very sharp. Solving problems, I mean, is without any question, I mean, probably something that we use a lot in these particular times. Uncovering opportunities, how you are going to be able to do that? I mean, how you are going to uncover opportunities? Because one is be able to foresee the issues coming up, but how you uncover opportunities? What is the best way to engage on that?
Well, I think the key is we have to use technology better. And as we look at the difference between artificial intelligence and natural intelligence, natural intelligence has got more and more expensive and less capable. Artificial intelligence has got less and less expensive and greater capability. And so the question that we have when we're dealing with uncertainty is, how can we use technology? How can we use artificial intelligence and machine learning to allow us to deal with this huge number of problems? I mean, I think a challenge some companies have, they get, okay, I'm going to go get visibility of my supply chain. And now I come to you and say, Jose, I have total visibility for your supply chain. Here's the 18,000 problems we have in the supply chain today. I need you to fix these by 5 o'clock this afternoon. Well, 18,000 problems by 5 o'clock this afternoon. I think we're probably just better off going to a bar and having a bottle of wine, because we're not going to be successful at doing that. And so what we need to do is we need to create, through AI and ML, some autonomous decision-making ability. And if I can take 17,950 of those problems off your plate and get those addressed using technology, now I can come to you and say, Jose, I got 50 problems I need to have solved before the end of the day. Well, now you have a shot. Now you might not get all 50, but you can solve several of those with your organization and your team. And so now you have an opportunity to be successful. And I think therein lies the challenge, is when we really look at the number of disruptions and problems and challenges within our supply chain, there's literally thousands of things that need to be understood. And you know, I was working with a client, and he called me up. He says, "Jim," he says, "we need more trailer parking." I said, "Why do you need more trailer parking? Has the business has grown?" He says, "No, it hasn't grown, but we never have available docks. And so what we need to do is we need to park the trailers someplace." I said, "But if you park more trailers on the lot, is that going to let you solve the problem? Or are you just build, you know, if you build a bigger pad for more trailer parking, you know what you got to do next month? Expand that bigger pad." Okay, because what you're doing is you're not solving the problems. You're just kind of putting it off. And so why don't we develop a way of scheduling our trucks and have real-time information? And we know that that truck's in door number 4 is going to be unloaded at 2:54 this afternoon. So at 2:56, I know what I'm going to put into that dock in a way that's going to allow my warehouse to work more efficiently, because that's close to the place that that product's going to be stored. And now I'm really divesting the opportunity in a logical way. You go to this guy that says he needs to build more pad to put more trailer parking, and you look, you walk down his warehouse, and you find out that half the docks are empty. I said, why don't you have trucks in here being unloaded? He said, well, this it depends. He said, each one is different. This particular truck is 40 minutes late. We don't know where it is. This truck got canceled because the load got bumped. This truck, we don't know where it is because the guy won't communicate with us. We have information that it's here, but it's not here, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so what we need to do is use technology to track that. We should know exactly where that truck is. I mean, goodness sakes, I did this to my grandkids a while back. They had all the grandkids over, and we were having pizza, and I bought it on Domino's, and Domino's has this app. And this app tells you exactly when the pizza is going to arrive, tells you where the vehicle is. And so I was sitting in my chair with my phone, and they thought I was working, and I was watching my pizzas. And I said, "Guys, are you getting hungry?" And they said, "Yeah." I said, "You know, I am too. I think I can smell that pizza." and they said, "Papa, how can you smell the pizza? It's not here yet." I said, "I don't know. But my smeller tells me that car is going to turn on our street right about now. I mean, you can't just smell that." And they say, "No." And so the little Anna gets up and runs out the door. She said, "There's a car that just turned on the street." I said, "Oh, I can smell it stronger. That is the car. That's the pizza." And then the guy pulls in the driveway and comes up the door. And the kids look at me and say, "Papa, how does your smeller work so good?" Okay. Well, it's not my smeller, it's my technology. And if we can get pizza delivered like that, my goodness sake, can't we run a warehouse like that?
I do love talking to you all the time because you're insightful leadership, Jim. It is amazing, and definitely, I have to tell you that I haven't read your book, but I'm planning to do that this weekend. So let us know where we can get your book.
The book is available on Amazon. You can buy it either in an ebook, which as shows on the screen is $9.99, or you could buy the soft cover for $16.99. The hardcover won't be out until October 1st, but you just go right on Amazon and they will print you a book. The soft covers are printed one off. And they will print the books for you real time. Amazing process Amazon has. If I decided today to change what's in the book and I sent in the paperwork by 4 o'clock this afternoon, by Monday, if you ordered the book, you'd get a different book. In the back of each book, on this particular book, it says on the back, printed on September 2nd in Candlesville, Indiana. Okay. And so it's one off. And so the books are from Amazon. I personally like a book in my hand so I can highlight it and so forth. I know I can highlight on ebooks, but I tend not to have that available when I need it. And so get a hardcover, get a soft cover, buy it on ebooks. And with Amazon, because of their efficiency, the books are a lot less expensive than they used to be. So it's a great thing to do. And I hope people enjoy the book.
I would assume that many people want to have a signed copy. How are they going to be able to do that, Jim?
get a signed copy, you just send me an email at jtompkins@tompkinsventures. That's tompkinsventures.com. The book's, I think it's $16.99 plus it's $4.62 shipping and handling, and it and then plus taxes. If you buy from Amazon and you're a Prime member, there is no shipping and handling, but Jeff Bezos won't sign the book for you. Only I do that. So, but if you buy a book from me, I will, and you ask for an autograph, I personally will autograph it, and would love to put that in your hands. I should tell you, Jose, if you have a book that's a brand new and you try to sell it on eBay, it sells pretty close to what it does for Amazon Live. However, if you have an autographed book, people will view that as damaged goods, and you get $2 less. So if you're going to be selling, you're better off not having an autograph. It's not like having Elvis Presley or the Beatles autograph.
Well, as I said before, I do love talking to you. Your insightful leadership is fantastic. I personally have learned a lot, and I continue learning a lot from you. So I do appreciate, the fact that you spend some time with us. I know that you're busy. Something that I wish you is to have a great vacation with your wife, great experience in Alaska, and any closing thoughts, Jim?
Super. Jose, all the best, and look forward to talking again.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Ciao, ciao.